global warming.
The heat is on. How mankind is sleepwalking towards the end of the earth.
Is it getting hot in here?
According to figures obtained from the Union of Concerned Scientists, 7 of the 10 warmest years in the 20th century occurred in the 1990s.
Global warming.
The heat is on. Floods, storms, and droughts, melting Arctic ice. Shrinking glaciers, oceans turning to acid. Dangerous climate change is taking place today, not the day after tomorrow.
Global warming. Is it getting hot in here?
The heat is on. How a whole generation sleepwalked into disaster, destroying the climate that has allowed human civilization to flourish over the past 11,000 years. This is the sound of iceberg calving, brash ice melting, and the trilling of leopard seals, recorded on the West Antarctic Peninsula. While the Earth as a whole has warmed by an average of 0.5 degrees Celsius since the Industrial Age,
it is all interconnected. The atmosphere, the ocean, the ice, the land, the biology, the human society, it's all interconnected. And it is the most complicated and complex object in the universe that we know of. It's not just carbon dioxide emissions, it's the fact that humans have transformed more than half of the land surface, and that changes the way moisture is exchanged between soils and the atmosphere. We've doubled the amount of nitrogen that sticks through, you know, agricultural use of fertilizers, so we've totally changed the nitrogen cycle worldwide. Of course, we've completely transformed the carbon cycle by the carbon emissions. We've paved over significant amounts of the planet. We've shifted alien species, shifted species from one part of the planet to another. We've changed the habitat, we're destroying biodiversity. Now, all of these things are intricately connected. And so there is no way, other than by being a sort of flat earth ostrich, that you could imagine that humans could do these things and that there couldn't be consequences on a finite planet which provides us with our food, our fresh air, our fresh water, our energy, and our shelter. So it's like being in a life support machine and saying, I don't know what this lever does over here, but I think I'll pull that, and I think I'll unplug this, and that box doesn't look very important. I think I'll jettison that. It's not very sensible.
I think what happened is that nature cooperated with theory and showed this dramatic warming of the last few decades. And not only did the glaciers melt at the same time, the sea levels rise a little bit, and the thermometers show warming, but plants and animals have been moving around. They bloom earlier in the spring. The birds come back from the tropics earlier. They lay eggs earlier. Butterflies move up mountains and move toward the poles. Every bit of this data is all consistent. And what is the likelihood that this vast avalanche of multiple consistent lines of evidence, each one of which is assailable, but collectively all line up, that they don't add up to a clear picture that humans are disturbing the system? One of the few things we understand with high degree of confidence is that CO2 is up about 30% over pre-industrial. And the reason we know that isn't because we directly measured CO2 like we have at Mauna Loa Observatory of the South Pole since the mid-1950s. It's because when you go to the ice cores that you take in the tops of very, very tall plateaus in the tropics in Greenland, in Antarctica, and you realize that each year when the snow falls in these very, very cold places, it doesn't melt. And if anybody has ever stepped on a snow fall, you know that you squeeze it. Well, what are you squeezing out? The air between the snow grains. But what happens in an ice field is that nobody's stepping on it. The thing that squeezes it is next year's snowfall. And next year's snowfall, so you get squished, you get pressure on it, and soon the snow is squeezed into ice. But what happens to the air that was in between the snow grains? It gets trapped as bubbles left behind in the ice. So when you drill a hole in the ice cap and you get a core and you take it back to the lab and you analyze the content of the gases in there, you can find out literally a library of the history of the Earth's atmosphere back past Neanderthal times. And we can go back hundreds of thousands of years and figure out what had happened. And that's why there's very, very high confidence in the scientific community that the 30% increase in carbon dioxide and 150% increase in methane is A, real, and B, due to human activities, because there are other fingerprints, such as the kind of molecules left behind. The isotopic composition of carbon dioxide is different for fossil fuels than for carbon dioxide produced by decomposition of organic matter, right? When the leaves die, they give you CO2. When we breathe, we get CO2. Well, that has a different ratio of heavy carbon to light carbon, and you can take a look at the relative ratios and find out since the industrial era, the amount of carbon-14, that's the heavy carbon, the radioactive stuff, has gone down substantially. Why? Because fossil fuels are 100 million years old and there's no radiocarbon left. It's all gone. So as a result of that, we have exceedingly high confidence that humans are responsible for this change in concentration.
Hands down, the United States is the world's biggest polluter, responsible for more than 25% of the planet's greenhouse gas emissions.
The heat is on.
Dangerous climate change is taking place today, not the day after tomorrow. How a whole generation sleepwalked into disaster, destroying the climate that has allowed human civilization to flourish over the past 11,000 years.
You know, each year is one of the top, in the top 10 of the warmest years on record, year after year.
Highly respected international scientists, they are all beginning to agree that at the current rate of depletion, we face the extinction of our entire species within two generations.
For me, climate change is no longer a theory. It has become fact.
It is very clear that we are seeing warning signs that we neglect at our level.
Blair's government wants to discuss climate change, and it wants to discuss solutions to climate change, and these solutions are things like carbon trading. And for example, you've got in Grangemouth a situation where people are living in a very, very polluted area with an enormous big BP oil refinery, and BP are taking part in this trial carbon emissions trading scheme, which is where they can basically sell the pollution they're making and buy clean air to offset the pollution. And what they're actually doing is buying carbon credits from a eucalyptus plantation in Brazil. And basically at the moment, Brazil is at great risk of turning into a kind of carbon absorbing sink for Europe.
The other big issue that's affecting climate change is aviation emissions. There's no fuel tax on aviation fuel. There's no VAT on it. They're getting a massive subsidy for promoting air travel. So you have, on the one hand, the most polluting form of transport, the one that globalization depends on, moving goods back and forward across the world, and its emissions are not even being calculated in the figures. If that isn't an unjust world, I don't know what is.
Global warming.
Apocalypse Now. How mankind is sleepwalking towards the end of the earth.
Is it getting hot in here?
The destructive power of nature is horrifyingly clear in the aftermath of the earthquake-borne tsunami, which devastated South Asia and parts of Africa on December 26th. The giant waves that struck coastlines from Sri Lanka to Thailand killed over 140,000 people and destroyed entire cities, in addition to much of the region's industrial and civil infrastructure. In the wake of the disaster, many scientists and government officials are now calling for an early warning system in the Indian Ocean that could alert coastal communities of future tidal waves. But some climatologists warn that rising sea levels tied to global warming may have exacerbated the damage caused by the tsunami and make low-lying coastal areas across the globe vulnerable to flooding, severe erosion, and eventual submersion. According to the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the levels of the world's oceans rose on average by 4 to 8 inches during the 20th century, with an additional rise of 3 inches to 2.5 feet expected by the year 2100. Poorly planned shoreline development, the destruction of mangrove swamps and coral reefs have also played a role in weakening the natural defenses of coastal areas.
Basically, sea levels are rising at the rate of about 0.4 of an inch per year, I think. And basically, the reason that we're seeing rising sea levels is for two reasons. The carbon blanket in the atmosphere that we're putting up is trapping in more heat, and that simply warms the surface waters of the oceans. It warms them down to a depth of about 2 miles. And as you know, from putting a pot of water on the stove, when water warms, it expands. So half the sea level rise we're seeing is from this thermal expansion, and the other half we're seeing is from the melting of ice all over the world. All the world's glaciers are disappearing except Antarctica. Big pieces of Antarctic ice shelves are breaking off. And it's really the melting of the glaciers as well as the thermal expansion that's causing this rise of sea levels. In terms of its impacts, the most directly affected people are people who live in island nations, particularly the smaller islands. And in fact, right now, New Zealand is accepting a large part of the population of Tuvalu, which is a small group of islands in the Pacific that are going under from rising sea levels. Not long ago, they relocated something like 40,000 people from some islands called the Duke of York Islands in the Pacific, also because they're going under from rising sea levels. In areas that are not going under, you're seeing, coupled with stronger storms, which is also a function of climate change, you're seeing much stronger storm surges and damages. So, for example, New Orleans is becoming very susceptible of serious flooding. Bangladesh has been hit by a number of very strong floods separate from the tsunami. And then another impact that we're seeing is the salination of freshwater supplies in low-lying areas. So a lot of South Florida's freshwater, for example, is becoming infiltrated by rising seas and salt water that's infiltrating the natural freshwater water tables. So those are some of the impacts that we're seeing in sort of slow motion from rising sea levels.
In February of 2005, a conference was held at the Hadley Center in Exeter, England, on how to avoid dangerous climate change. Over 200 of the world's top scientists from 30 countries were attending. They presented the most up-to-date findings in the fields of oceanography, glaciology, biology, meteorology, and ecology. They were seeing a dramatic rise in the last 50 years of all the indicators of climate change. Increase in average world temperatures, in the levels of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, and in the level of the oceans. From ice core studies, we know that carbon dioxide concentrations on this planet had been stable for the last millennium. They were never more than 10 parts per million off, and fluctuated between 275 and 285 parts per million. Now CO2 concentrations are beginning to exceed 370 parts per million and are rising from year to year. Other greenhouse gases show the same dramatic increase, mainly in the past 40 to 50 years. We are already living under a dome of air that no one has breathed in a million years. But worse, the opening presentations at the Exeter Conference introduced 4 new so-called wild cards: the accelerated melting of the enormous ice sheets of the Antarctic and Greenland, and the recent discovery that not just our atmosphere, but also our oceans have become overloaded with CO2. A decline and possible reversal of the Gulf Stream that carries heat from the tropics to Europe was also mentioned. The conference was held to provide data to the governments of the G8 countries, England, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, Japan, Russia, and the US. At the G8 meeting in Gleneagles, Scotland, they were to come up with a consensus on climate change. Hopes were high that the U.S. would finally agree to placing limits on CO2 emissions. All other G8 members had already done that when they signed on to the Kyoto Protocol. Well, the July 2005 G8 meeting came and went, and George Bush and the U.S. delegation, representing the world's largest polluter with 42% of global CO2 emissions from fossil fuels, refused to set limits and even managed to reduce other climate goals set by the conference planners. That Tony Blair could declare with a straight face to the media that progress had been made at the G8 meeting can only be understood if one considers the deception and outright lies on climate change propagated for years and up to this day by corporations such as ExxonMobil, by the Bush administration and the White House Council on Environmental Quality, by the Petroleum Institute and most of the U.S. media. This really is a small planet. These sounds of breaking glaciers and the songs of leopard seals were recorded in Antarctica. The breaking ice so far away is connected to us by cause and effect. This is an invitation to extend attention and love.
She wasn't Lady Di, but I remember. They closed the road the day that Elkie died. We stumbled through the gate and found her broken body on the ground, where we fell with her family and cried. There's nothing you can do or dream of doing when suddenly your 6-year-old is dead. The car that hit that little girl has punched a hollow in the world we'll never fill for all the tears we've shed. The open road has closed another future, another sapling rubbed out on the tar, and written in the skid marks there, my own part in the whole affair, whose way of life still needs a motor car. I didn't learn to drive till I was 30. I swore I'd never join those hypocrites. Now looking back, I'm glad I did. How else would I get to the gigs where we sing songs about how bad it is that someone else is paying for the petrol, someone living further down the line is choking where the only hope is there's a bottom to the smoke, and she might be a great-grandchild of mine. And I might be the driver kills your daughter, the butterfly, the badger, and the bird. I pump the gas, I fell the trees, pollute the earth, the air, the seas, and these hypocrisies make me absurd. The price of petrol's in the news this morning. They're calling it a national disgrace. Further down the page I saw the North Pole has begun to thaw, just like the ice it packed round Elkie's face. A bed of ice to keep her body with us. Drove to get some more, although I knew the price of petrol in my car is every unacknowledged scar we suffer on this road we didn't choose. Somebody greasing palms with oily dollars, denied us any greener avenues. But hey, it was a big mistake. It's not too late to hit the brakes. There's still too many Elkies left to lose. We left her little coffin in the chapel, where people turned to ashes on the air. And everybody knew it then, we'll never see that face again, unless we get to heaven and she's there. And if you think that hell is where we're headed, then you don't know the people that I do. A people of such elegance and natural intelligence. In fact, somebody very much like you. 'Cause I have every confidence in you now. Together we can figure something sane. Like the love that Elkie gave, our light will shine beyond the grave when little kids play in the streets again. La 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 la. Like the love that Elkie gave, our light will shine beyond the grave when little kids play in the streets again.